shanty where the dust hangs high, far from a river where things grow green, the flowers weep and they lean away from the blood-stained soil beneath my feet. The thorns outnumber the petals on the rose, and the darkness amplifies the sound of printer's ink on propaganda page that will rule your life and fuel my rage. Ooh, ooh. I tried to be my knees, but my knees.
Terence Trent D'Arby is what he was known as then, and he underwent a very profound spiritual change and became Sananda Maitreya. And this is his song, which I have loved for years. It's so profound. It's titled As Yet Untitled, believe it or not. This is from his 1987 album, Introducing the Hardline, according to Terence Trent D'Arby. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And just to give you a heads up, I've done, if you look at my house right now, it looks like something, some kind of a clothing bomb went off. And clothes are everywhere. It's really not that. I'm trying to push out the sound. So wherever I can stuff clothes into the crevices and cracks of windows and doors, I'm trying to do that. Why? Because naturally, people say, oh, she's on the air now. Let's create some more sound. So it's the task today is there is the mass cleaning of the outside of all of the buildings here. And with that, you have to have a generator. And even with that, you have to have the noises of workers talking to each other. So I hope I've done a reasonably good job of blocking out the sound, but you may still hear some sound. Today is a special day, as you know, a contemplative day for us. Today is the anniversary of the brutal murder of George Floyd in his hometown of Indianapolis. Of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And so we'll talk about what we have been carrying in our hearts and our souls for this entire year as we deal with this. Tragedy is certainly not new to the African American community. But this was particularly hard-hitting and heinous. We had four police officers implicated in his death via extreme violence. One of them, the lead officer in this, Derek Chauvin, recently was convicted of second-degree murder and third-degree murder, and also second-degree manslaughter. He is to be sentenced on June the 25th. There are three other officers who have been charged with aiding and abetting him: Thomas Lane, J. Alexander Kung, and To Tao. And of course, that trial has not yet begun. But it just hit the nation so hard. Everybody was just, they had to take a deep breath on this one, because we saw it, and it made a deep impression, not on our minds alone, but in our souls. It's a year since this heinous crime and the death of George Floyd, and the family of George Floyd ceremoniously will be received in Washington, D.C. today. And there'll be a great deal made of it. And I think there's a genuine as politicians can be, a genuine effort to accommodate the family and its concerns about the other George Floyds and what will be done to remove this arbitrary sanction by police, very often visited on people of color. Presumably, this is the way it ought to go. We don't read generally of whites being subjected to this kind of just wanton violence by police. But on this day, I'd like us to become a bit contemplative, if you don't mind, and talk for yourself, from yourself, about what this experience has done to you, with you. What has it allowed you to see and feel that you really never felt or saw before? And more than that, to go a little further and talk about what is it that we are meant to do? This isn't all about George Floyd. George Floyd has died, but there is supposed to be meaning in his death for us as a nation, as a world. What do we extract from that as being personal for us to help us change in a way? To change our focus beyond self. What are we called upon to do in continuing the cause of human rights struggles all over the world and placing others who have been distressed by it as a priority, some corner in our lives? We ought to have some space, dedicated space, for this work. So let's talk about that today.
Let's talk about how or if you have changed in your orientation in this particular way, whether philosophically or in any other way, to remind yourself that we have obligations. We may not know to whom yet, and maybe we do, but we have continuing obligations. And the obligation continues with regard to human rights struggles that somehow we managed to allow to go by without any involvement. Are we prepared now? Have we committed to changing that aspect of our lives, to add that dimension of purpose in our lives? Not for ourselves, of course, but for others who, in so many ways, are suffering or have suffered or have died because of the inhumanity of a system or systems. So we'll talk about that today and honor George Floyd that way with your considered thoughts and opinions at 888-874-4888. What does it mean to have come through a year with so many extraordinary occurrences in our collective lives? We're not trained psychiatrists and psychologists, but we carry a burden just the same. What is that burden? How have you dealt with it? And what is your ongoing commitment? Have you made one yet around what we owe to others? 888-874-4888. I'd like you to take some time and think about this question, because in some ways we probably have never expressed it, not even to ourselves. We probably have not seen ourselves as agents of change, as people who have the power to create change. But certainly, I don't think that we came through this experience together without being changed. I'd like to talk about that today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear what you are thinking on this day. There will be a lot of symbolic things happening today. Nancy Pelosi, members of Congress are meeting with the family and the family's legal representatives. And they'll be discussing measures before Congress to hold accountable, especially within law enforcement, but not specifically only law enforcement. But how are citizens who clearly are the targets of this kind of treatment, this kind of violence, how are they to be protected in our society, which says it values freedom and democracy? It's not happening, is it? And we would be, I think, crazy to just think that it will suddenly fix itself. No, it doesn't fix itself. we have a role to play here. And we are obligated to do it. We can't leave it up to others. In one way, shape, or form, we have to also be involved. If not for ourselves, but for those we love, for our children, our elders, our neighbors, our friends, we have to face this problem with the mindset that we will solve it or do a great deal to solve it. So this is how we can honor George Floyd today. Express from your heart how his death affected you, and whether it inspires you to do the work that you've long delayed or long ignored even, but that you are committed to being a soldier in the battle for freedom, for justice, for life. All right, I don't see any names yet. You're getting a little shy today. 888-874-4888. This is the best way, I think, today to honor George Floyd. There would be other days coming and other ways coming. But let us put him in our minds and hearts today. And let him help us come to some kind of answer as to what mission could we undertake? What job do we have in the struggle? As abysmal as things are on that front, we can't help but recognize that so many people gave their lives. They've suffered terribly so that things can improve. The battle is far from over. And we cannot afford to have people crawl back into the safety zone of their own tiny world. It's about me. I'm seeing to myself and my family. No. That too has to change, a consciousness. A new consciousness should pervade all of our communities, that this is not the way we were meant to live, and we will not tolerate living this way. We give life and meaning to George Floyd when we pick up from where things left off. 888-874-4888. I see you're not too eager to be contemplative, openly contemplative today. I understand. It's hard for many people sometimes in public to talk about things that they deem to be very private, to expose themselves emotionally. But it's not that. That is not the issue, is it? It's about sharing and forming community, encouraging all of us to have the courage to see a future in each other and resources in each other. I don't see any callers. Yes, I do see somebody coming in right now, but let's talk about that. I don't want to talk about Derek Chauvin, and I don't want to talk about these brutal cops. I don't want to talk about them today, not today. I want to talk about How do we honor, truly honor George Floyd's life with our own action? Mohammed from New York, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice Lee.
Good afternoon.
I should have said professor. And good afternoon to all my classmates. I sincerely hope your health continues to improve, and may God bless you. Eutrice Lee, my particular, you know, I've known about my particular mission and purpose in this life for a little while now, and I'm working toward that. We are going to deconstruct capitalism and the way things are done today. Not myself personally, but what my job is to do, and I started it some time back, is we go to prepare the young people to make the changes, to deconstruct this system that we're dealing with now and build a new system based on freedom, justice, and equality. Now, my particular mission and job is to prepare the young people. What I'm going to do, and I've already started it, I started in the public school system, when I would treat them in groups, I would also teach them how to build their character, leadership skills, and grammar, and they're going to make the changes. Most
all right,
of the people
but
around
hold on
today,
for a second. Hold on for a second. These are all admirable endeavors. However, I'd like you to address the question posed today.
Which is
the and question? The question specifically refers to George Floyd. What was the impact, or what has been the impact of George Floyd's death, murder, on your life?
First of all, it left me very angry and depressed. And not just George Floyd, but I'm also looking at my brothers in Palestine. They're going through the same thing, and they're doing it with impunity. And this angers me, and this has to change. We're going to change this, and we have some persons who are going to also help change this. And I would like to tell you this, but in many ways, you probably don't want to hear it. And the people in positions of leadership in this country, they know what's coming. And many of us know what's coming, but most people do not. And I'm going to say this, Eutrice, most people are just followers. And that's why I say, well, I'm going to teach them character building and leadership skills. What I mean when I say followers, you have a whole group of people that call themselves a race. They're not a race, they're a group. They call themselves white. And they're not white, they're pink, and everyone just go around and say they're white.
Okay, you're way off the mark now. You're way off the mark. And you're not answering the question. The question is not, we're not looking for vitriolic attacks today. Today is exactly the opposite. I asked a question hoping it will trigger in those listening, a profound evaluation of how George Floyd's murder by police, how has it contributed to a new understanding or some understanding of how you proceed in life? Don't use it today as, you know, some kind of a polemic to justify whatever it is you're thinking. I specifically asked, how does his death, his brutal death, how does it situate you to rethink your purpose and to deal with the question of contributing to the whole, to everyone?
Okay, I'm going to attempt to answer your question. I don't know if you'll accept my response, but Eutrice, we are dealing with a system, and I hope most people understand what systems are.
Don't go there, because you're assuming I don't know or I don't think
so. No, I think you do know.
Yes, I do. I have, but that's my way of thinking. It's not necessarily everybody's way of thinking. I have my own way of understanding the society in which I live and how I relate to some of these unique problems that we have. What can I do? How can I make things better? But today's not the day for lecturing.
Okay.
Today's going for contemplation.
Shall I stop or continue?
If you're going down this road, you should stop, because it's only going to get more into your personal, the lingering animus about how people are treated in this country and what, therefore, are they entitled to exact as a payback or as a response. And that's not the question today.
Okay, Yatrice, I'll move
today
one last
is the occasion of an anniversary of a man's murder. And who, even in death, has caused a coming together of communities all over the world. Let's deal with that.
Okay. As I said before, to ensure that everyone receives justice, I think we need to work on changing the system. That's my response.
And okay.
I'll let someone else. Thank you very much for hearing me, and I'll let someone else talk.
All right. Thanks for calling in and contributing. Brother David from Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, Yatrice. I'm getting beyond the point of thinking about George Floyd. That could have been me, and I'm going to move on from that. I moved to the point where I think it's important on one level for me to articulate as much as I can on whatever venue I have about the workings of the system. But the main part, as we look at things today, should be thinking about what actions we can take to deal with the people that keep this system intact. It might mean some actions such as boycott against targeted corporations. It might mean things way beyond just talking to those people in the Congress. So those are action things that the community of people that live here and want truth and justice to do would be to take actions to deal with this issue. It's not just a matter of talking about what happened to Mr. Floyd. So I think that is an important part. What actions do we take? That's the main thing that I'm thinking about at this time.
What, if you can offer something off the top of your head in that realm, what might it look like from your point of view, what these actions?
Yes, it might look like targeting some corporations that benefit very well from this system that we live in of white supremacy, racism that is rampant in this society, and targeting them and dealing with them, such as rejecting their product, boycotting them. These are direct actions that people can take to deal with this, as well as dealing with the people who sit in legislative areas and getting out of the idea that it is hopeless to change this so-called two-party system that we have, and thinking that, you know, we have to stay with that. I know that is a big problem with a lot of people. They feel that we've got this thing in place and we can't go anywhere else. We have to deal with the two groups of that one party and maybe do something different and say, wait a minute. Wait, Republican and Democrat, enough of this. This is not what we need to do to have a society that is really democratic and where people believe in truth and justice. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking of when you ask that question.
Well, thank you for calling in and contributing today. Bruce from Queens, you're on the air at 888-874-4888. What are your
good
thoughts?
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and to the PRN family.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I just think about this day to commemorate George Floyd's demise. I had a couple of moments of silence for him and those before him because we've been going through the struggle for a while. And I just remember one record by the late Gil Scott-Heron called It Must Be Something We Can Do. And my thoughts on this is almost like Brother David was just saying, we've been dealing with this for quite a long time, and we don't let up. Like Frederick Douglass say, agitate, agitate, agitate. We have to keep on. We can't leave what we have been doing and what we're doing now to stop. We have to keep it on till we get through. We got to bust through the glass ceiling if there's a ceiling at all. That's my thoughts.
Okay. What has, we've had a year. What has occurred to you in the year since his murder that you think should be a pivotal part of a movement, if you will?
A movement on the conviction of these killer cops, like the one that choked out George Floyd, you know, that should be highlighted when they get convicted and sent to jail to let people know that there is some kind of justice and there is something working under incredible odds. You know, we up against the unions, the police unions, the cops get carte blanche when they do something to African-American people. There actually is justice and it should be on the front page or news, whatever, let people know that things are getting done. But pass that George Floyd bill into law would make a huge difference across the 50 states and make sure they be enforced.
Uh-huh. Thank you so much. Thank
You're
you for
welcome.
Contributing today. You have something else you wanted to add? Okay, he's gone. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon.
I'll do my best to contain my anger because I know you said you wanted to make this more of a reflective program, which I appreciate. But I have to say I've been involved in the people's movement, if you want to call it that. You know, and the issue of the prison industrial complex, police violence was central to a lot of my activism. And I was a member of the Student Liberation Action Movement of Hunter College. We participated in many rallies and organized various actions in regard to any number of issues. The Amadou Diallo case was very instrumental and, you know, galvanizing a lot of people my age when I was a young college student at that time. And, you know, it's just so macabre how the system has almost like a horror movie with infinite sequels, just keeps taking everything a step further. And it makes me very paranoid as a black person. It makes me really feel a conspiratorial sense in a way, because, you know, it was like Amadou Diallo happened. 41 shots fired. And people say, oh, my God, how could you fire 41 shots, bullets in the bottom of the brother's feet, because they continued firing when he was flat on his back. And then it was like a year later, Sean Bell, 50 shots. Oh. You know, we saw Eric Garner get strangled. I Can't Breathe became a chant. So what did they do? They knelt on the brother's neck for 9 minutes. It's like everything that they do, it's like they take the level of horror even further when you thought it couldn't be taken any further. You know, with Trayvon Martin, which was another very emotional case, it's like in that case, it wasn't even a cop. You don't even have to be a cop. You can decide you're going to kill a black person and you can just go ahead and do it. And the so-called system of justice will see the whole thing through with expensive lawyers and all of its apparatus and say, oh, it's okay that you do that. You can kill a black person, a black child in that case, with his candy in hand. So, you know, the thing that I will say, though, on the inspiring side is that even with the fear of COVID and the fact that we weren't supposed to be in contact with each other, the people rose up. The people saw another atrocity and they got up and they weren't afraid of catching COVID, for example, and they went out and protested in a massive way. And it really is my belief that, you know, I hate to use the term, but yes, the violence that was threatened by the people of Minnesota, first of all, is why the system said, you know what, we have to make this guy pay the price. I think they would have been happy to let him off the hook, but they said, you know what, we just can't afford it. So, you know, it shows once again the power of the people, that it's still alive and that it's still real, and that the threat that we pose to destabilize society, basically, or just interrupt the flow of things, is still present. And that's what we need to be aware of at all times, and not allow the movement to be diffused, which is generally what happens, where politicians with leather gloves come out and say, oh, don't worry, we're going to take care of everything in the appellate court, and everything just kind of fades away, and we go back to celebrating our American holidays, chasing Easter bunnies and whatnot. But
well, you gave us a long view and a wide view. How about getting intensely focused on what you went through, what you have come to believe?
Well, you know, for me, the perspective was interesting because I'm a father of two young children. So right as people were literally protesting right out my window, and I could only chant along as the protests went by, but I was mostly responsible for my kids. And there was a few times when my son, who's three now, but was two at the time, you know, he had his first few protests that we just joined along in Harlem. He was in his stroller and I gave him his first street protest experience. So that for me was a new experience as an activist, is now being responsible for young children. And, you know, I just think that, you know, that's the $1 million question. That's the magic answer that we're looking for. What can we do? I think everything that people can think to do is valid and they should. But I think one thing that people should do in particular in terms of mainstream solutions is, if you voted for Joe Biden, if you support the Democratic Party in any way, now pressure them with letters on your social media, what have you, any means you can think of to pressure them and say, no, 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 we're not okay with this. You can't just show up on, you know, Charlemagne the God's program and say black people are obligated to vote for you, or saying, oh, if you don't vote for Biden, you're not black.
You ain't black. No, he said, but you ain't black.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You ain't black. And you know what? Ain't is a great word, by the way. I've been thinking about the word ain't. It's very functional and it should probably be put in the dictionary. And, you know, and given its proper due. But, yeah, you know, and then he promptly came in. I don't know if you saw Umar Johnson's comments, but, you know, I think the brother was on point, which is, you know, Biden immediately came in and day one enacted transgender legislation. Then he enacted a bill for Asian protection. I don't have a problem with any of that. However, where's our bill? Because you pressured us uniquely to support you. You said we were obligated as a community to support you. So now we can't just sit back and say, oh, we're happy Trump's gone. Now we need to start putting pressure on Biden and saying, okay, Biden, you relied on us. Now you need to step up.
Uh-huh.
And not just Biden, all of the people who support him and are aligned with him.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed,
thank you.
I enjoyed this chat with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Yatrice.
Thank you. Lenny from Queens, what are your thoughts today?
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon.
You as a professor, I'd like to know if you could tell me the difference between freedom and liberty.
Well,
what's the difference between those two?
These terms are used very broadly, but it comes down to this. How do the people engaged in the struggle for freedom and liberty, how do they define it? And how do they go about getting it? It's not a blanket statement, I don't think, because people are reacting to different things, different circumstances, different issues. And they also are interested in putting together what seems to them to be appropriate responses that may not be the same as another group someplace else. So it seems to be a uniquely tailored response. We can agree that there are some broad things that, you know, characterize this notion of what you call freedom. People have different interpretations of it. But when you work as a group, you find that you begin to tailor your definition. So it's not one of those things that you just put out there and said, this is what freedom is. No, freedom is what people make of it. A freedom struggle is what people make of it.
Okay, yeah. According to Black Law Dictionary, I think freedom might be associated to the land, and maybe it's the other way around, and liberty is, it's the other way. When you are on water, you probably have liberty. That's probably why the Statue of Liberty is surrounded by water. But besides all that, there's a new language for the 21st century. I'd like to know if you know anything about quantum grammar.
I like to stay on point. We are talking about George Floyd today. What are your thoughts about George Floyd and how you have changed or are changing your life, conscious and cognizant of the struggle that has already begun?
I'm learning a new language, which is the language that the court system of the 21st century is going to use, and it's called quantum grammar, as in quantify things, quantum. So what I'm learning so far, I learned that for the 8,000 years of history of the Roman Empire up to now, we've been using something that is a farce, as a ruse, as a system to confuse the people. And when you go to court, they know exactly what they're doing. If you don't know what you're doing,
you are on a different plane from us today. You're on a different plane. I want to focus on George Floyd. So we'll save your observations. It could be part of the conversation at another time, but not today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Chief. How are you?
Okay, good afternoon.
Thank you. Well, to get back to what I believe your initial subject or drive was for the conversation today, personal reflection as to the tragic death of George Floyd. It doesn't change me much. I've always been an activist personally from the days of Eleanor Bumpers and Ronald Glover. My mother dragged me out there on Jamaica Avenue in front of what used to be Gertz to protest that death. And I've been out in the streets active, participating with December 12th. I'm not entirely optimistic based on what I've seen and what accomplishments have been made and what has been lost. But the core of myself, I always try to keep the faith because I believe there's something better coming. It might not happen in my lifetime, but whatever small part I can do to contribute the usherance or the birth of this new way of looking at people, of this new, we need to become more human. We need to become more humanity related and not so much cost related. Capitalism allows a person to look at dollars and cents, bottom lines, facts and figures, and we need to be a more human-oriented society. And I believe that future will come, but there's a price to pay, and I think we're in the process of paying it. I think that the American empire has to disappear before we'll even get to that point to where we can look at something different. But I've read several books, and I believe that anywhere from 3 to 10% of the population gets an idea, and that can be the catalyst. That can be the genesis to change. But change is a struggle. So I just try to keep my part in the struggle.
Okay, you stopped short of using the word die, didn't you?
Stop short. I guess you could say that. Yeah.
American society has to die. I want you to go back to that unfinished phrase and explain what you mean, because it sounds so harsh, but I know that's not what you intended to be heard as saying. But there is a level of meaning that I clearly identify with. Could you explain that? What do you mean American society as we know it has to die?
Well, the way that we view each other, the way that we view the world, the greed, the avarice, the philosophy of the great I am. I mean, this country was formed by people. There were people here before a certain other people came. And those people worked together to have a nation. And they were usurped by other people who built the nation with the help of other people. But no one man can do anything. No one person can avail himself of anything. And until we realize that, really, we're all in this together. I mean, on every level, even on a quantum level, if you want to get if you want to get into physics, if you want to get into actual sciences, we're all connected, the whole world. We all feed into a cycle that keeps this planet going. And until we realize that each person, each individual, each cell is part of a greater body, and that what I do to better myself should better you, and together we can rise, which, you know, people say, oh, that's corny, and all that sounds, you know, so esoteric and la-di-da. But I mean, what else is there? I mean, we tried pretty much everything else, you know? You got people in the middle of a crisis that have made billions of dollars. And on one hand, and on the other hand, you got people in that same crisis that are eating dirt. You know, when do we get past the self, drop the ego, and get to the greater good. And it's a process. We need to change our minds. Not kill America, but change that American concept of the greater I am. It's a world. It's a world community. It's all a rising tide does lift all boats. We only got one planet. They ain't found a better one yet.
What in this period, this 1 year period since George Floyd was murdered, what in particular do you recall as having the most profound impact on you?
The fact that I don't believe in the concept of race, but the fact that different groups of people came together for a common cause. The fact that this seemed to transcend all of that. I know a lot of it was due to the fact that everybody was sitting on their thumbs because of this COVID-19 and the lockdown. But the way people reacted and the way people continue to react, especially with the younger people. I'm of a certain age, but there's a younger generation out there that I see that glimmer of being able to step outside of the ego and have that universal mentality, I call it, that needs to change, that needs to kill America, to have that ability to step beyond yourself, to step beyond your petty fears or your prejudices, and really want to get to know the next man, the next woman, and figure out how we can help each other. That's what I saw with all of the protests, with all of the marches that I went to, that I still try to go to, even though they're limited, but that's what I saw. Those questions, those conversations, there wasn't that harshness that has been in this country for a long time, even though Donald Trump brought out a lot of it. But I saw the other side of that also. And I think that's a good thing. Like I said, yes. I'm no fan of America, but I think it's a good thing.
I think so, too. Thank you for your contribution today, Ed. Really profound. Thank you.
Thank you.
Neil from Connecticut, you're on the air. As you quickly review your experiences of the past year, what do you attribute as the most profound thing that has happened to you, that has affected you in the last year?
Oh, I'm not sure I would be able to say that. I think it was Lincoln who tried to refer to Revelation in the New Testament, and he was steered away from the subject. So in the interest of remaining politically correct, I'll put it in a general way. When the COVID started, I was quickened. Now, let me just say, may God have mercy on us all. And now, the reason I called was to answer your question, which I recall was, what can we do, what can I do, and all of us, to honor the life and the death of Mr. Floyd? And what arose in my spirit was the death of Kenneth Chamberlain. These deaths are linked directly, but separated by some years. He was killed in his own apartment in 2011. Interestingly enough, I was looking up the date of Mr. Chamberlain's death, and I typed in the killing of Kenneth Chamberlain, and I came up with a movie. So there is a movie based on fact on that subject. That is when I became hyper aware. I'd always been dealing with the fact of African American people and people of color being shot, killed in other ways, in the street and in prisons. But when Mr. Chamberlain was killed in his own apartment through a very tragic succession of events. As I said, I became hyper aware of the situation. And then, having lived in Staten Island for several years, I was very saddened and disturbed by Eric Garner's death. I rode the ferry for years. So to answer your question, I think the best way we can honor the deaths of these people and the violent deaths of people all over the country and the world is to increase the peace, to do everything in our power to preach love to one another, to talk about the connectivity across all kinds of boundaries that leads to the type of solidarity that we all need now. One has to ask, who would benefit from, for example, a race war? Now you're thinking, what? What's that? What? Well, let me ask you another question. How many uniformed policemen do you think, or would you guess, are wearing Stars and Bars t-shirts under their uniforms? I say thousands. So back to the best way to honor is to do everything in our power to avert a race or even a class war. And I'm speaking of violent when I say war. We need an evolution, not so much a revolution.
Well, we have to leave it there for the moment, because we're out of time. But you can finish your sentence.
We need the peace, and we have to learn to love one another despite our differences, as simple as that sounds. And I'm really not sure that humankind can of themselves solve the problems we face today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you all for contributing to the program today and for offering your profound observations and thoughts. This is what we need, believe it or not, more than anything else. We need people talking to each other and listening to each other. And we need to not lose faith. We need to have continuing faith that we can make things better. I thank you for listening today and contributing, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye. But I'll return.